Welcome back to the Lyme Podcast. My name is Aaron Alexander. This is a place that we bring together the world's leading experts on all things health and wellness, help you optimize your mind, body, and movement. Today's conversation is with a living legend in the world of self-development, relationships, and things of the like. It was Gay Hendrick. He is the author of The Big Leap, which is probably sold around a million copies. I don't know exactly how many it sold, but a lot. Originally blew up with Oprah, and he's just been expanding since then. I really value his perspective in a lot of ways because he's been doing it forever. I believe he's 79 years old, and he's very youthful, very jubilant, very excited, very healthy, and just has like a very playful, youthful spirit to him, which I think is a really strong indication that someone's making some right decisions. So this conversation is about breaking through limiting belief systems, breaking into your own version of your big leap into your zone of genius, as well as a lot around harmony within relationships. And a part of that would be harmony within relationship with yourself. Thank you guys for subscribing so you get each week's episodes. Thank you for leaving reviews. Thanks for sharing this. This, I think, would be a great one to share with if you've got a partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, you got friends with a partner, or people that would like to have a partner, or also would like to break through their own version of limiting belief systems and tap into their own zone of genius. I think this would be a good one for them. That's it. That's all. Let's get to it with my guy, Gay Hendrick. I have a question that is something that I actually came up with this morning. Typically, I don't have like a prepared, this is going to be the question I ask. But I was listening to another interview with you, and one of the things that you brought up was you're going into teach, I believe, a seminar or workshop or something of the sort, and you were anxious about what you were going to present. And I think it was in Colorado, and you chose to look within to come up with something that would be of greatest value for people. And it was one thing, or perhaps the one thing, that if people were able to understand and integrate into themselves and into their lives, it would make the biggest difference for them. And do you know what I'm talking about, or do you want me to tell
yes.
you what the one thing
absolutely.
Was?
Oh, absolutely. It was a formative moment in my life, yes.
Yeah, what is that one thing?
Well, the context was I had finished my PhD in counseling psychology and was just about to start my first class, teaching my first class as a new assistant professor at the University of Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I was walking around, and I realized I had this anxiety because I was about to start my professoring career, and while I knew all of the techniques and the whole field up, down, and sideways, I had never had an experience of personal transformation that I could draw on, you know, that I could say was my own pure experience. Yeah. And so, you know, like I there's a guy I know that's the conductor of choruses for symphony orchestras, famous all over the world, but he himself can't sing a note, which is very bizarre when you think about it. So I didn't want to be one of those people that was professing without having some kind of deep soul, body, emotional level of understanding about what the one problem was that human beings suffer from. So that was the context. And I realized, wow, I've asked professors my whole life and I've read books, but I've never asked myself. And so standing there out in the woods in Green Mountain Falls, Colorado, I just stood there for a moment and I hatched this question: what is the one thing that human beings need to do in order for us to get unstuck and transform ourselves in the moment? And then I kind of rephrased it another way around, kind of from the negative side. I said, what's the one thing we're doing wrong that keeps us stuck? And, you know, because if you look at the rest of the universe, it's just doing what it does. Like I've got six or eight great oak trees on my property, and every year they drop their acorns, but you don't hear them out there groaning about it. You know, they just participate in the fullness and wholeness of life. So why are we so different? Why do we make ourselves miserable? I also just read something that stunned me. which was something from the King of Spain way back a few hundred years ago when Spain was on top of the world. And so the King of Spain had everything, you know, palaces, gold, beautiful circumstances. And he said at the end of his life that he had carefully counted up and he'd had 14 days of happiness in his whole life. And I remember reading that. I said, wow, the King of Spain, he only managed 14 days of happiness. I want to go the other way. I want every day to be full of happiness. And so anyway, that was the context. And so I asked this question and I just realized I've never asked myself. And so I stood there and I asked the question and I waited and I waited. And all of a sudden I had an experience, which I was not, had no idea that it was going to happen, where I thought I was going to get some kind of intellectual answer in my mind. But what actually happened was it was like a benign freight train of positive energy roared through my body and left behind a piece of information. And to this day, I don't know where that came from or how to account for it. But the only way I can describe it is this freight train of energy left behind some wisdom in its tracks. And the big piece of wisdom was the one thing we do wrong that keeps ourselves stuck is that we keep ourselves distant from our actual experience. Yeah. You know, a person, and you see this all the time, people getting talked out. I remember going to a memorial service a while back and people were saying, you know, one person would say, you know, your husband's in a better place now. But nobody ever said, just pause and feel your grief. You know, that oftentimes is the last thing people think of. So what happened, the magic for me is I decided to do that in this moment. This is 1974. So 50 years ago, I just stood there and let myself experience all the things that I'd never let myself experience before. And I kind of reeled around under those trees, just feeling like old anger about my father dying and grief about my grandmother's passing, which hadn't been that long before. She was kind of my number one love object in my early life. And so I had not digested and finished the grief there. And I could feel how much anxiety and fear was I going to be able to make it in this new job I was taking on. And, you know, all the different things, it was like I got a deep portrait of all of the inner worlds that I'd kind of been shutting out by living so exclusively in my mind. And so I became convinced in that moment. That made me a somatics person, by the way, because it was something I could feel in my body. And this next piece of information that came right behind it was, the only way to deal with the deepest parts of ourselves is to love them as they are, instead of trying to understand them or figuring out them or anything like that, or justifying them or whatever the stories we tell ourselves in our mind. A key thing is to simply learn to be with our experience and to love it as it is. To love our anger, to love our grief, to love our fear, to love our sexuality and its complications. Those are very challenging things for human beings to do because, you know, for so long we've been taught the value of loving others. And you know, there's a good reason on the airplane they tell you to put your own oxygen mask on first before your kids and others, because we've got to learn to love and treasure and honor ourselves as a way to love and treasure and honor other people. And until we can do that, we don't quite feel as good as human beings can feel. So, you know, I wrote the first book I wrote after I met my wife, Katie. We've been together 44 years now. And I wrote Learning to Love Yourself right after meeting her because I had had that experience that I believe led me to her, and that I don't think I could have met and prospered in my relationship for the last 44 years had I not had that experience of first learning to love myself and to be with my own experience as it was. and as it is.
Yeah. What is the biggest barrier that you see? Because that intellectually probably makes sense to most people. And then living that and actually embodying that is the big leap, you know, and that's something I've heard, you know, lots of people say, and I've heard you say, you know, like that, this isn't exactly how you or anybody says it, but the biggest, most powerful, most meaningful journey a person could ever take is from the 12-inch journey from their head to their heart. How do we actually do that? Because people get that. It's like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, if you've ever had any type of experience of love or something of connection, or maybe like some samadhi unicity type sensation that lasted for 30 seconds or 2 hours, you know, you're like, wow, like that was it. And then 24 hours later, you're back to being in conflict. Like, how do we hold that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem you touched on there is that it's our limiting beliefs, often acquired at a very early stage in life, which keeps us out of what I call our genius zone. In The Big Leap, and one of the things I'm spending a lot of time talking about is its predecessor, Your Big Leap Year, which just came out and is a day book, you know, 366 days of things from The Big Leap and translated into something you can do in 30 seconds or a minute. And one of the reasons I put this new book out, and, you know, 15 years after The Big Leap came out, is that I kept getting email from people touching on this problem about, you know, I read The Big Leap and I realized, wow, I've got these limiting beliefs and I've got my genius zone. How do I get from A to Z, you know? And so the new book lays that out. But just the limiting belief problem is one of the things that contributes to what I call in The Big Leap the upper limit problem, that you have a limiting belief and there are two big ones and a couple of smaller ones. But one of the biggest ones is a deep old unconscious belief that you don't deserve the good things of life, that there's some fundamental flaw in you that somebody's convinced you of. And, you know, we don't make these things up. They usually come in through our ears or eyes or some other place. You know, somebody decides that they don't deserve the good things of life, and then that's passed down through their programming to the people around them. So the fundamental flaw limiting belief is a first one we have to look at and say, do I have that? Do I have anything? Do I have a belief that I'm the wrong weight or height or skin color or ethnicity to have the good things of life? And a lot of people do have that limiting belief. A second big limiting belief, especially for people who are interested in transformation and things like that, is what I call the fear of outshining. A lot of people have a limiting belief that says it's okay for me to support somebody else or follow a leader or listen to a teacher, but it's not okay for me to stand up in the light. And I think everybody needs to have their portion of the light to open up to knowing and broadcasting and feeling the things they are most passionate about. You know, you mentioned a little while ago, how do you get from that 12-inch journey from your head down to your heart? The only way I know of is by catching yourself in the middle of one of those limiting beliefs and then shifting down to your body and letting yourself experience. Is that connected to old anger? Is that connected to old sadness? Is that something I'm scared about? But those things are body experiences, somatic experiences that we need to learn to be with and, you know, to honor and to love and to ground our lives in. And it can only be gotten by what I think is one of the big evolutionary tasks of our time, which is to admit our bodies into our minds and admit our minds into our bodies so that we're all one thing. And, you know, we've come 100 years from Thomas Edison, who said the purpose of the human body is to carry the head around. Yuck! You know, that's a very limiting way of looking at the world, although thanks for the light bulbs and that kind of thing. But somatically, that's just asking for it, because if you cut your head off from your heart and your mind off from your body, you're setting up a rattle that's going to be palpable in your life in the not too distant future. So alignment, getting aligned.
Something, I appreciate that. Something that strikes
me. Remember that word, young man.
I won't forget it. Something that strikes me is your sharing about holding on to a belief system that we are inherently flawed. I think that's a very common thing. To not feel that way might feel arrogant, you know, or egotistical or something of the sort. We have all these different stories and barnacles around our relationship to ourselves and who we believe we are. And something that strikes me in that is it's actually in some ways incredibly vulnerable to not live in a place of believing that you're flawed, because that holding on to that belief that you are inherently flawed is actually a protective mechanism to protect you from the time that the world provides evidence that you are flawed. So instead of you allowing the world to thrust that upon you, you're like, I'm actually going to take control of that. And I'm going to believe now, I'm going to take control that I am flawed, and I'm going to hold that belief myself. I'm going to hold that myself, as opposed to waiting for you to put it onto me. Mm-hmm. And to allow yourself to release that is actually an incredibly vulnerable endeavor.
It's incredibly vulnerable, but it's where all the fun is.
Correct.
You have to go very vulnerable to get into the place of big fun, and that's where I remember Maharishi, the TM teacher, back in the early days of his visitation over here to America, somebody asked him, what's the simplest definition of enlightenment? And in his great giggly little voice, he says, fun all the time. And fun in the biggest sense of the word, not like a kid at a amusement park, but just a deep resonance with life itself, a deep resonance with your own true self, not just your fear, your anger, and your sadness, but your joy, your sexuality and its connection to the whole universe of productivity and creativity. And I mean, when you think about it, human beings, no one on this planet should have any self-esteem issues, because there's 9 million species here, and we're the only one that can have a conversation like this that we know of anyway. And so not only that, but we are here because we are the winners of 250,000 or 400,000 swimmers that left our dad's body into our mother's body way back there. And we're the only one of those 250,000 marathoners that made it. The rest of them were beat their head against the wall somewhere down back on the path. But we got here. And so that's why I say that one of the biggest problems that human beings face is that we keep ourselves at a distant from the normal, natural, creative power of the universe by thinking we're special. You know, we get into this delusion that we're somehow special from the rest of life and the rest of the universe, and that keeps us at a distance from it. It doesn't do anything to the universe, but it makes our life a living hell if we start getting out of alignment and out of harmony. I wrote a poem last night, a haiku. I like to write haiku, which are the classic haiku is 17 syllables long. So if you're a haikuist, you sort of aim toward 17 syllables. But it's the idea of a moment captured in time. And the one I wrote last night was, the afterglow of lovemaking with my wife, two hums harmonizing. The idea of two humming beings, both aware of their energy, harmonizing their hums. And so to me, that's life at its best, when we are in touch with our own harmoniousness and can then harmonize with other people. as long as we're living in our limiting beliefs, we'll keep creating life over and over again like Groundhog Day, that's just the same way it was, and out of those old templates. So heroically, we've got to get in the process of taking on our own hero's journey of uncovering our true potential, what I call your genius zone, where you're doing what you most love to do and what makes your biggest contribution to life. To me, that's the sweet spot. That's what I've been living in and dedicated to for many decades now, and still having a good time doing it.
Yeah. Something that there's several different things I'd love to ask, but we're not going to have time for all of it. And there's like three questions and I'm like, oh, I want to pack all of this into there, but
I'll come again.
We'll do it again. Creating harmony in relationship. What's from your perspective and experience working with couples, what would you say the most common thing that you see that creates disharmony in relationship?
Okay. Well, that is a big subject. Okay. Well, let me say there are three things that kind of roll into one. Okay. Yeah. One is the moment somebody stops telling the truth about their authentic experience. Like if they don't say, I'm mad, or I felt hurt by that, or I'm scared right now, or whatever it is. If you don't do that, if you hide that, that sets up a rattle in ourselves. That rattle keeps us from, well, it keeps us from a couple of things. One, it keeps us from the direct experience of the energy vibrationally of that emotion, whatever it is we're defending ourselves against. Like if you're defending against your old sorrow, you've had a big heart aching, heart breaking event. And like many people, you haven't gotten through it yet. I don't think my mother, for example, ever recovered from my father's death. She never remarried, and she kind of replayed the memories of it throughout her whole life, because he died when they were both in their mid-30s. And so her whole life was kind of a shrine to that grief. And we all suffered from it in a way, because out of that grief came a lot of rage that she directed at other people. And so that when the moment you come out of alignment with what you're organically feeling, you justify it or seal it off or do something with it that keeps you yourself from resonating with it. The moment you do that, all sorts of problems start happening. I say it's like putting up a kick me sign on your back from the universe, because you're resisting what is. You're resisting the experience of whatever it is. And the moment you do that, that rattle occurs, that lack of alignment occurs. I love the name of your podcast, by the way, Align. I mean, I've used that word a jillion times, alignment, because the act of getting into alignment releases a kind of energy that you didn't know you had before.
I want to take a moment and share something that I find invaluable to improving my sleep. Stress is a common factor that affects everyone in today's fast-paced world, leading to all sorts of different issues. What if the answer to a better stress response is in fact a key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium. Actually, I'm specifically talking about Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could be causing a multitude of other health problems. What sets Magnesium Breakthrough apart is its ability to support several different things. One, healthy levels of stress hormones, such as cortisol. Two, a better balanced stress response in both your nervous and hormonal systems. Three, healthy production of GABA, the relaxing neurotransmitter, leading to a more peaceful and better flow state. This means that this supplement acts like a brake on your body's nervous system, helping to calm and soothe, promoting a better quality of life. But you have to get the right kinds of magnesium. Truth is, most magnesium supplements you'll find in health food stores use only the two cheapest synthetic forms. And since they're not full spectrum, they won't help your magnesium deficiency or do much to support your health. There are actually seven key forms of magnesium, and you must get all of them if you want to experience its calming, stress-balancing effects. That's why I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. It's the only organic, full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep, all in one bottle. Simply go to buyoptimizers.com/align. In addition to the discount you get by using promo code ALIGN10, there are always amazing gifts with the purchase. I'm a massive fan of Bioptimizers. I'm a massive fan of their Magnesium Breakthrough supplement specifically. So if you want to get yourself 10% off, jump over to buyoptimizers.com/align. Use promo code ALIGN10. That's buyoptimizers.com/align. ALIGN10 promo code. Get yourself 10% off. I know you guys are going to enjoy.
Yeah. It creates, I was just going to say, it creates friction, you know, any form of a lack of alignment will create friction, and now you're holding that friction. And something that happens that I've noticed and witnessed experience within my own life and relationships is a lack of acceptance of anger and rage. And because I have been inculcated into a lot of kind of new age communities living in Hawaii and Boulder, Colorado, and now Austin, and these places that are kind of like this new age spiritual mecca type spots where it's like, you know, you want to be calm. You want to be compassionate. You want to be gracious, and you want to be able to hold space. And oftentimes within that, there can be a bypassing of like, I'm fucking pissed. You know, I feel I'm like, I have a deep anger, but that's not okay. And so instead, because we learned that that's not okay, we just push that down, and then it gets stored in the body, and it comes up in various different, typically passive aggressive ways if you don't have an acceptance of that, or if you don't have a safe avenue to be able to express it. But that's just one example. That's something that I witness in the spiritual new age community, particularly kind of like a non-acceptance of some of the, like the less kind of some of like the uglier emotions. But to really lean into those uglier emotions actually is the gateway to that sensation of joy and ease and all of that. It's very interesting, the duality of that.
I totally agree. And there are, you know, you can really see cultural differences. Like I grew up in the Deep South, and the culture I was in, where you're supposed to be very polite about your feelings. Nobody, you know, and I contrasted, I remember going to my grandmother's funeral, and, you know, everybody was saying things like, you know, she's gone to heaven, she's in a better place now, and everything like that. And that always just so rankles me, you know, that because it's trying to talk on top of the grief that everybody's feeling, you know. Yeah. Let's all take 30 seconds and 3 deep breaths and feel how deeply sad we feel. You know, that's what I would do if I were a minister, probably why I would never get hired as a minister. But, you know, acknowledging the thing that is, that's underneath everything, or the anger to it too. And certainly everybody's fear. But, you know, I really respect cultures where I was watching on YouTube the other day, a culture where when a death occurs, all the women do this ululation kind of thing where they, you know, and make this grief sound to the heavens and kind of act it out. And, you know, if you look back into like the apocryphal gospels from 2000 years ago, those were the Bible chapters that didn't make it into the official Bible, but a lot of them have some really good juicy stuff in it that Jesus was reported to say. One of them is, if you bring forth what is within you, what is within you will save you. Yeah. If you, yes, save you or set you free. If you you destroy you or will hold you back. Yeah. And I really, I mean, need we say more? Because, you know, every day I certainly work with people who have been somehow not releasing their full potential, even though they may be the CEO of a Fortune 50 corporation, they're hiding still their genius zone behind their zone of excellence. And at a certain point in life, I think human beings, in order to be really satisfied, we need to say yes to our genius. We need to say, okay, I want to have it revealed what I most love to do and how I could use that to make my biggest contribution. There, I've said it. I said that, you know, 40 some years ago, and it's been, you know, decades now of revealing more genius and writing more about it and teaching more about it, so that I haven't spent a minute since, you know, for 30 years now, doing anything that I didn't love to do and what I felt was my biggest contribution. And so to me, that's the sweet spot of living. I want everybody to have access to it. They might not need to write a book or a symphony or anything, but they can sure as heck make a soup or take their kid for a walk or something with their genius, the fullness of their genius behind them.
Yeah. Which, getting into the zone of genius, it's kind of like self-actualization could be maybe analogous for it, but that's a very vulnerable place to put yourself in, because you're reducing the self-limiting beliefs that you've had that were protective mechanisms the whole time. That's something, and feel free to disagree with that or add to that, but coming back to the, I interrupted you with the question of the things that create disharmony in relationship, mm-hmm. and with the yes. addition of repressed sensations, it's not okay to share yes. that.
And not, I don't. Untold truths. Okay, yeah. So let's just say unspoken truth. A second kind of thing that's glommed into that is projection, because mm-hmm. the moment you're not telling the truth, your mind starts to find fault with that over there, come up with some reason you're not telling the truth. And that, so you go from withheld truth right into projection, from blaming the other person and holding yourself as victim and the other person as the perpetrator. That little move is tremendously disruptive in human life, because you get to a point where you say, I'm mad and I know whose fault it is. And if you would just get your act together, I'd feel happier. And that moment, nobody ever on the other side of that ever agrees with that. Nobody ever says, now that I have it pointed out to me, I am responsible for all of your misery. You know, just once I'd like to hear somebody say that, but it doesn't happen, because everybody else runs for the victim position too. And it becomes two victims projecting onto each other. And heroically speaking, there's only one way out of that, and that somebody has to take personal responsibility and say, okay, I created this situation. I don't know why, but I take responsibility for creating it. I'm not the victim of it. I'm the creator of it. And the moment you get one person saying that, usually the other person doesn't go right along with it. They say, ha, I'm glad you admitted responsibility for it. But that doesn't last very long, because you've become Teflon. The moment you own responsibility for something, even if you don't understand why yet, you become Teflon to other people's projections.
Yeah. What is the third?
The third is a comprehensive problem, men, women, it's the problem of repressed potential, repressed genius, unfulfilled potential.
Right.
Ugh. It breaks my heart when I travel the world and places where maybe the women have to wear, you know, veils and hoods and all that kind of thing. All the wasted potential there that, you know, underneath all those veils are computer programmers and symphony writers and, you know, people whose potential will probably never be liberated. And I find the same heartbreak over here, you know, even though we have much better conditions for it. It's heartbreaking to see how much withheld potential there is in the world. And I think we have a collective sadness about our own inability to fulfill our potential, whether it's because we're caught up in our limiting beliefs or because society has put a hex on us. A lot of people come with a societal hex, like being born into poverty, or, you know, being born into a family where everybody, like I'm recovering from a broken femur, and one of my PT guys was a guy who has tattoos all over, a former reformed gangbanger, as he puts it. he had a realization one day. He was having, I think it was Thanksgiving dinner or something with his family, and he realized everybody in this room has either been to prison or is going to prison or has some hassle with the law, and he himself had just gotten in trouble with the law for the first time at age 15 or 16. And he said, wait a minute. He had this realization, wait a minute. Even in fact, we've all had that experience. That doesn't mean we can't do something different in the future. And so he tried to share this bolt of enlightenment at Thanksgiving dinner, and he got roundly chucked out of the family for, you know, people didn't want to hear it. Because everybody had their own reason about why they had been to prison or their own reason why they were going to prison. And it usually wasn't involving something they had done. They were a victim of it. I used to work in prisons and juvenile delinquents. And one of the first things you learn in a prison is that nobody's guilty. You know, everybody thinks they got there. Last time the California prison system did a survey on that, I think it was 27% of the prisoners blamed their own lawyer, and like 20% blamed the judge and the prosecutors. But ironically, more of them blamed their own lawyer than blamed the prosecution. And something like 17% of them blamed their kids. So, you know, you get into victimhood and start looking for who made my life this way. There was a New Yorker cartoon some years ago where it showed these three homeless guys on a street, and they were making up signs to hold up. And one of the signs says, "Society put me here, please contribute." And the other guy said, "Sign, you know, I'm a victim of life's circumstances, please contribute." And the third guy was putting up saying, "I got here through a succession of poor choices." And the two guys, the two victim guys, saying, "You're not going to make a nickel with that sign," you know, because it's not common for people to take responsibility in light of life circumstances. On the positive, you know, it's why every time you see a picture of, well, now King Charles, you know, has cancer and everything, but even before that, he looks grave and concerned, this look of perpetual concern. Well, kings and queens always have that on their faces because it's socially unacceptable to walk down the street looking happy about your life circumstances. And the king, if the king walked down the street saying, "Hey, cheer up, people, we got it made, you know, life is great," you know, probably the king would last half a block before he got phased out. And so, yeah, you know, everybody has to put on a kind of a face, a social face that works in their particular environment.
Yeah. How does a person, what effect does being in the pattern of blame have on a person's life and on a person's relationships?
Well, number one, it keeps you out of life's creative flow. This is really important because the moment you disown responsibility and say, "This person is doing it to me," you become a victim. And it's the same as saying, "The universe is doing it to me. I don't deserve this. I don't belong here. I'm not equals with you guys." And so the moment you do that, that's a very unhealthy place to be for lots of reasons. Like I say, it puts a kick me sign on your back from the universe, because the moment you go out of the flow, you also deny yourself access to the universe's creative energy. And I want people to go the exact opposite. I want people to open themselves to life's creative flow and find out where it takes them. That's, to me, the big excitement of life is, you know, to open up to where can this amazing universe take me if I surrendered to the creative flow that I'm part of just by virtue of being here. See, we got this great thing called pure consciousness that we all get born with, and it's a palette on which we can paint a masterpiece, but it's also a palette where you can, if you go around staring at the floor and, you know, like Leonard Cohen says, everybody's talking to their pockets, everybody's looking for a box of chocolates. And, you know, either in your hopes and dreams or in your misery and depression. But the start to just being with the way things are at this moment is the open gate to then opening that creative flow in the universe.
For a person, I feel like most people that already identify as being responsible or able to respond is like a fun way to break the word down. But they trend towards, even for example, in a relationship or maybe a business transaction or something of the sort, coming from a place of 100% of this experience is my responsibility. If I'm in a relationship with a person that is being violent or is being abusive in some way or is being avoided or is being, you know, any of the different things, even that ultimately is my creation because I created a resonance to draw you in. And so everything within this, and I'm also responsible for my actions and my expressions and the way that I show up in this relationship. I'm responsible for both parties in a sense. That can work really well as long as your counterpart is also responsible for both parties. And if you can be in that dynamic, I think it's incredibly powerful. And then you become like affiliates for each other, or you become like proponents for each other, you become a team. And you can look out for each other of like, oh no, it actually, I think you're taking too much responsibility. That's mine. And I think if you can get into that dynamic where we're competing for responsibility, that's my like vision for an ideal relationship. But a person, if you're in the place of being like, you know, like the person that I'm with or the business partner I'm with, in theory, they align with the concept of responsibility. But one thing, once things get off the rails a little bit or become a little emotional, become a little reactive, all that goes away. Trauma response comes in, the concept of responsibility, it's all those conversations are gone. What's the path towards reclaiming responsibility even when things are hard?
I remember Mike Tyson once saying, everybody's got a plan until they take that first punch.
That's correct. Yeah.
Well, it boils down to, Katie and I have a thing we do in workshops called Ha Hum. We say your tendency is to go ha, like I got it. I know whose fault it is. Ha, I gotcha. Right. You know, but the real heroic response is to come back home and say, why would I have set it up like that? You know, the greatest one-liner any client ever said to me in therapy was a young man who was in his 30s, strikes me he was around 35 or 37, something like that. He had counted up that he had been in 17 different relationships with women when he was a teenager, where they had all left him in one way or the other, either after a couple of them actually during the first date had gotten up and left, but you know, like after a month or 6 months or something. And here's what he said to me. He was coming into therapy for the first time at this. He says, I'm beginning to wonder if it had something to do with me. You know, but what you're talking about is Groundhog Day. You know, it's over and over and over again until you own why that might be happening. You know, and there's always an answer there, but almost nobody gets around to the question. The question has to be asked from wonder rather than criticism, though, because you can't criticize yourself to enlightenment. You can't say, oh, why am I doing that pattern again? You know, it has to be, wow, how come I'm creating that pattern again for the 17th time? That is productive because wonder is a gateway to the creative powers of the universe. Wonder, the simple act of, there's something I really want to know and something I really don't know. May I now be open enough to learning it? Those are the moments that really catapult your evolution forward.
How does a person place themselves or their consciousness into a higher quantity and concentration of wonder in their lives?
Ideally, the moment you catch yourself in fear and turn it into wonder. That's the quick path. That involves some body awareness, knowing when and what circumstances you're feeling those butterfly sensations of fear. If you can go from fear to wonder, that little move opens up tremendous amount of power because you only have to do it once to understand how it works, because then you can do it in the middle of anger. Then you can do, you know, you can catch yourself, I'm feeling angry about this for the 14th day in a row, or for the 14th year in a row. The moment you catch yourself in the pattern and, of all the possibilities in life, why would I be dialing up that one? That's powerful wondering. And that, you know, that means you're 10 seconds, you're one breath away from really understanding something profound about yourself.
Within your relationship, you've been with your partner. You say her name is Sarah?
Katie. Her official name is Kathleen, K-A-T-H-L-Y-N.
I don't know where Sarah came from.
But everybody, including Oprah, mispronounced it. So we get everybody to call her Katie.
You've been together for how long, did you say?
We met in 1980, 44 years ago.
What still comes up in your relationship after 44 years? What obstacles, what barriers, what fears, anxieties, what reactive
behaviors?
It's
pretty subtle. I'll give you one from yesterday, but to understand it, you'd have to realize that neither one of us have said a cross or unpleasant word to the other one in probably 25 years, certainly not this century. We've been in this house here for almost 23 years now. Nobody said a crossword or a critical word to the other one in this household. So just that gives you, we're kind of working it at a subtle level. But Katie came into the kitchen the other day, and I was in the middle of making something, and I was almost finished. And I said, I'll be out of your way in just a moment. Even though it sounded innocuous, Katie later on came back and said, somehow down in there, you considered that you were in my way. Where did you get an idea like that? You know, this is both of our kitchen. And I realized immediately the childhood program, the kitchen was a place where good things didn't happen. And I wanted to get out of there as soon as possible. And, you know, so it had its overtones going back 79 or, you know, 70 some years. And so that would be a little example of something that comes up. I can't remember one like that in a while, though. So we must be down to the kind of the seeds and stems.
You guys are granular at this point.
Yeah.
That's amazing. How uncommon that is. You have to go in 2 minutes, but I would love to continue this conversation again at some point.
Well, I'm around. I'm finished promoting as of a couple of days ago. I'm finished the main promotional tour for the new book, right. But I'm always happy to talk about these things. And you're a good questioner and are interested in the same things I am. So I'd be delighted to come back around and talk about any of these things.
I appreciate that. So the latest book is Your Big Leap Year.
Yes, Your Big Leap Year. It's 366 days in case you have a leap year in your life and need an extra day, like this year happens to be a leap year. You don't have to start it on January 1st. You can get it tomorrow and start it tomorrow with day one. And it works through for 366 days, all these cool things in the big leap, like the zone of genius. And you devote many, many days and many, many months to that. And so it just gives you a way of grounding yourself in the process every day and keeping you on track.
That's a great idea. That's like a great follow-up to the previous question of how to actually embody and integrate these concepts and practices and what could just be intellectual ideas into actual physical embodiment is making it habitual. You know, making it a daily practice and something like that sounds like a really fantastic remedy and solution for that. So thank you. Thanks for all of your work. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you. Good being with you. And until next time.
Yeah, I appreciate you, brother. All right. That's it. That's all. Thank you all for tuning in. I'll see you next week.
Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. I want to invite you over to the video version of this podcast over at YouTube at Align Podcast. I appreciate y'all's comments over there. I love commenting back. I love having an interactive experience with the episodes, with y'all hearing questions, comments, ideas, anything of the sort, ways to improve the podcast. I'll be over there and just really enjoy getting to actually hear from you guys on YouTube. So that's Align Podcast. Thank you for subscribing over there if you feel compelled to do so. Thanks for sharing this. Thanks for doing you. I will see you next week.